Hey, Mila, you feeling warm today? You got good heating in your house?
It's all right. It could be a little cooler. I'm in my podcast studio. The rest of the house is warm, but the podcast studio is a little chilly. So,
okay. So
that's why I got my thermal on today.
Oh, well, it's funny you should be mentioning heating and that kind of thing, because our episode is actually brought to our listeners by Park Power. And they're
Park Power.
That's right. They're a friendly yokel. They're a friendly local utility provider in Alberta.
And oh wow.
Yeah. And I mean, if you are warm, but you're like, my life could still be better, they also do internet and electricity as well.
Oh, cool. So
yeah.
Internet, electricity,
yep.
Heating and air.
That's right.
Yes. Gas? Can I get gas from them or no?
Absolutely. Like, you mean like for your car?
No, like for like natural gas.
Yes, natural gas.
To run my furnace.
Absolutely.
To heat my water.
Yes. Yes, yeah. They got low rates apparently and awesome service.
Oh,
and
low rates and awesome service.
Okay. And I mean, and I know that you care about other people, so it'll probably, work for you that they also profit share with local charities.
Well, that is really fantastic. They're giving back. Okay.
That's right. That's pretty cool. Right.
And it is good.
Yeah. And on top of this,
are they located in a park or is the founder named Mr. Park, or we don't know or care?
The founder is named Chris Kozowski.
Oh.
I've never met him, but apparently you can spot him because he always wears a bow tie.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. He's a classy fella. And he actually is located in Sherwood Park, which is not far from where I live.
That makes sense. So that's where the park comes from.
Indeed.
Our listeners have been are curious about entomology or etymology or...
Yeah, absolutely.
Ecology and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And I mean, I know that like you and me, because we're doing the podcasting thing, we're just rolling in money, but...
Yes.
The fact is there's actually people out there who want to save money, right?
I mean, yes.
Yeah,
I mean...
They want to pay less.
The company that I use here for my power, I just send in like an extra $10 every time and say, hey, just... Buy donuts for the gals in the office.
You never buy me donuts, cheek. okay. Well, look, here's the deal. Like in Alberta, I don't know what it's like in North Carolina, but in Alberta, you can actually choose who you get your internet and your electricity and your natural gas from. It's not like just some big state conglomerate that's like, this is how
you have choice.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Park Power is one of those choices, and they offer
that's cool.
Yeah, I think so. That's fantastic.
Well, tell them, come on down to North Carolina. We could use some choices down here. Have Mr.
Kozowski
bow tie.
Yeah, yes. Have Mr. Bow tie.
Give me a call.
All right. Well, hey, Mila, if you decide to switch, and I mean, part of this is you'll probably have to come to Alberta, but it's inevitable. You're already part of the Alberta Podcast Network. You're going to be coming to Alberta.
And I love Park Power, so I'm halfway there.
Absolutely. Well, if you want to switch, all you have to do is you just go to parkpower.ca.
Okay. Oh, .ca. Cool.
That's right. Because it's Canadian, right?
It is. .ca. Yeah.
There you go. Parkpower.ca.
.ca. That's simple and easy. Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Welcome, unprofessionals, to a Kentucky Fried episode of Unprofessional Development. I'm your co-host, Shane Lawrence.
And I'm Mealy, and we have with us Donnie Piercy, 2021 Kentucky Teacher, State Teacher of the Year, however those words go together. We're glad to have you. I ran into you somewhere on... I don't even know why I bother explaining. Everyone I've had on here, I've met on Twitter, so that's just how it goes. So I don't remember.
I think we met in an AOL chat room or something like that.
That sounds a lot better. Yeah.
Yes. both on a Petunia Facebook meetup. Anyway, huge fans of Petunias. But anyhow, I met Donnie. Something about whatever he did. Made me go, he seemed to be like a good podcast guest. And I said, maybe it's because he has a podcast. Maybe that was it. I got no idea. But anyway, we have him on here. We're gonna talk about all sorts of stuff. You guys are gonna have a good time, and then you'll listen to another episode when you're done this one. Okay. So what I always like to start off, Donnie, is what does education and being an educator mean to you?
All right. So this is my 17th year teaching in public education here in the States. I've only ever taught fourth or fifth grade. When I was doing my student teaching, again, I don't know what they call it up in Canada. Maybe it's student teaching.
It's student
I don't
teaching.
Know. I'll roll with that. But, but I they in the States, they usually spend half of your student teaching time in a first grade classroom, or like K-1, 2, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and then the other half in like upper elementary, third, fourth, and fifth grade, if you're elementary school certified like I am. And about 3 weeks into my first grade placement, my first grade teacher realized, like, you know, maybe I'm tall. So I'm about 6'3", so about 2 meters tall, a little more than that. And my first grade teacher said, you know what? I think you might be better suited to kids that didn't just come up to your knees. So moved me up to fifth grade, got to spend an extended amount of time there, learned a whole lot about just, you know, everything that goes into being a fifth grade teacher. And really, since then, it's been the only grade level, kind of that upper elementary, fourth, fifth grade that I've ever really wanted to teach. And I've been fortunate to work at schools that those are the positions that I've been in. I guess one of the big things that I'm huge on when it comes to the classroom is, you know, there's so many things in education that are about students consuming knowledge. Whether it's even modern stuff with kids watching YouTube videos, maybe on Khan Academy, learning how to, like, you know, add fractions or simplify equations, or learning about how the proper way to pronounce Van Gogh or Van Gogh is, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, to me, I think there is a place for that in an education. But to me, like, as an educator, one of my most important jobs, I think all teachers should be this way, is teaching students how to not just consume, but to how to take that knowledge and then create something with it. And, you know, for me, like, I do a lot of work with my students in the ed tech space. I am not an artist by any means, at least in terms of the traditional sense of the word. but I like to encourage all the educators that I work with, whether in my building or even, you know, just the students that I work with in my classroom, teaching them how to just, hey, take this stuff. And there's all these tools and materials out there that you can then use to go ahead and create a project with to demonstrate your learning. And, you know, there's definitely a lot of, whoops, that was a bad idea. Maybe we should try something else that goes along with that, just like with everything else in education. But I guess that's probably my message as a teacher.
That. Create. A little create greater than consume, you know, thing. I think that's so true. And sometimes you need to consume before you can create, obviously, you know. That's how eating and defecation works, by the way. I don't know why I went there, but like, I'm like, oh, I consume and then I create something in the toilet. But
and here we are. We've arrived.
And that's why we call it unprofessional development, okay? In case you're wondering.
Oh, man.
But no, first of all, I want to say, like, I don't think I could ever teach elementary school because I just think my personality just suits high school better. But if I
your joke right there proved that you could probably teach elementary school.
Thank you.
There you go.
No worries.
But what I was going to say is, to me, like, fourth and fifth grade is one of the great ages. I don't know. It depends where you teach. Do you teach the same kids all day, or do you share them with another teacher?
Yeah, so I've had both experiences. I'd say probably the first 8 or 9 years that I taught, we did like a rotating schedule.
Where like it's like deal. ELA and history and math and science.
Yeah, I taught all the math, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But for the past 4 years, we started it really, or 3 years, just because of the pandemic. Once we got back into the classroom, we're like, well, it's kind of, we didn't want to like mix kids up, and, you know, contact tracing and everything.
Yeah,
it would just be too much
to minimize that.
So
yeah.
For the past few years, like, I've been self-contained.
I love it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. What I love about it, one, is, you know, as someone who has a really hard time often sticking to a schedule, it's great because I know that if we start a lesson in the morning, I'm not tied to like a 59 minute and 59 second time limit where, okay, I've got to get this stuff down.
Right.
I know that I can say to them, hey, you know, this afternoon, we've got a quick science lesson. You can finish this math unit up then, or you can finish this reading project up then, whatever it is that they're working on.
And you don't have to worry about that. The other class is on the same pace and you.
Yeah.
I go off on a tangent with class A, and we go down this fun road where everyone's learning, but then class B, we don't do that. And all of a sudden they're like two lessons ahead. And now my day is mixed up for the next week. So I love
that. Or that whole problem of like, oh wait, did I make this joke in the earlier class? Did I make this, you know, did I make this reference yet? I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I think there's pros and cons definitely to it. You know, I still work with a team of three other educators. You know, there's four of us on our fifth grade team. We have about 27, 28 students in each of our class, which actually is a low number of students.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And it's pretty what I like about too, where especially on my team that I work with, I teach in Lexington, Kentucky. What I like about the team that I work with is all four of us are different. Like we each have our own approaches to education, but we still have those weekly team meetings where we sit down and say, okay, what content are you teaching next week? And we kind of just have this big share out each week. We've got a doc that we add on to, and it's like, hey, here's five or six lessons I'm going to do next week. You know, here's six slideshows, here's some activities, we just kind of throw it all on there. Mm-hmm. And we go on the expression of use or lose. It's like, hey, if you want to use this, you can. If you don't want to, hey, we'll just keep it on this doc till next year. Yeah. And again, great way to collaborate, but it also, I guess, keeps a little bit of autonomy myself as the teacher, and also for the other teachers that I work with too, because I recognize that I don't teach the same way that Ms. Dolan does. I don't teach the same way that Ms. Kazmarek does, and I don't teach the same way that Ms. Rothwell does. Yeah. But at the same time, we still have content that, you know, we're required to teach. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of a nice approach to be able to, I guess, value and respect the fact that each of us approaches this profession differently.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I was going to say that the other part of that is the fifth graders and the fourth graders, like, they're not mature. Like, they obviously love the poop jokes, but they are mature enough and their brain has developed enough so that they can be very, like, creative. They can have very deep discussions, and it's not just like wiping noses and, like, you know, I'm going to take all you, like, you know, God bless the first and second grade teachers, but that is, to me, really, really would be challenging, because just their ability to learn, how much they can learn in a given day is just so small, relatively speaking.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. Well, we each have those creeds as an educator, you know, those things that we say where it's like, okay, everybody needs to know this. And I'm a firm believer that if you teach kindergarten for more than 10 years, like, your state or your province should give you an honorary doctorate, because it is a calling. I mean, and what I've learned is the people who stick in kindergarten, they love it. They're great at it. Mm. And when you have a good kindergarten teacher, you're going to remember that teacher for the rest
definitely.
Of your life. Like,
oh,
you know, I,
oh, they're super,
you know,
impactful.
I was,
kindergarten,
oh, for sure.
Teachers always, yeah. Like, yeah. You can, for me, I can spot them because they're this weird mix of, like, hyper discipline organization, like drill sergeant level precision, and then just this, like, cloud of compassion. And it's such a weird mix, but it's exactly what you need to be. Like, that describes, you know, both my kids went through kindergarten, you know, not too long ago, and their teachers were both like that. They're just, like, just hyper organized and, you know, like, very, you know, straightforward, but also just the kindest people you can imagine. I'm just like,
oh, for sure.
Yeah, I'd be in jail if I taught kindergarten.
I mean, just the amount of growth, like, you know, I'm at my school, again, I teach full time, but I'm also the school technology coordinator, which, you know, part, it's supposed to mean, like, hey, I do tech trainings and I share all this stuff, but, you know,
it's broken Chromebooks.
Yeah, my Chromebook's not working. So I just, you know, restart it and it seems to work half the time. But, you know, I love walking into those kindergarten classrooms, those first week of the school year, when kids, half of them can't even recognize, you know, no sight letter recognition, no sight word recognition, barely can count to 20. And then you go back to that same classroom 9 months later, and it's just like those kids have blossomed. And again, I have no idea how they do it. But it's definitely a magic that happens in each kindergarten teacher's space.
It is
the level
neat
of
to see.
Progress, right? It's like,
it is.
It's, you know, when my kids leave my class, it's like, well, they're a little better, you know, Adobe Suite, you know, but whereas, you know, your kid in, like, grade one or two, it's like, they can read now. Like,
yes. And here's the amazing thing. The other thing that kindergarten teachers are great at is translating what the kindergartner has written. I remember when we went to visit son just years ago, kindergarten class, and she's got all the work out on the hallway wall with, like, it's just like a little picture and maybe like 10 words that each kid had written. You know what I mean? It's like mid-year or whatever. And
you walk by and you're like, are they writing Sumerian script here on the wall? What is this?
Yeah, and she's like, oh, the dog ate the bone with the cat or whatever it is it says that, you know, and you're like, oh, if you say so, that sounds good to me, you know? So,
but you know, awesome. I guess to get back to your point from earlier, I do agree. Like fifth grade to me, like I had my favorite teacher of all time when I was in fifth grade, Miss Romana. And, you know, she just made it fun. She made it engaging. You know, she was not afraid to still let us be kids. Mm-hmm. And but she also, like you mentioned, was still kind of that she still understood that she had lessons that she had to teach and just through a really fun and enjoyable classroom experience. I felt like I bonded with my classmates more, made some good friends for life. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it kind of motivated me to seek out that grade level once I looked into education.
Awesome.
Well, now, of course, you know, you've obviously, you know, hit that target. You are Kentucky's Teacher of the Year 2021. So, I mean, presumably you haven't like completely backslid in the last couple of years and, you know, I'm assuming you're still pretty good.
Yeah, I'm actually in sales now. Can I talk to you about a life insurance policy?
Excellent.
Absolutely.
No.
But I mean, how has that sort of changed the way you do things, you know, getting that kudo, or has it?
I want to know kind of like how Kentucky does it and how you get from like,
yeah. What does the 2021 Teacher of the Year training montage look like? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, have you guys ever seen Rocky IV? No.
Okay.
No, just kidding. So each state in the United States kind of selects their Teacher of the Year a little bit differently. Some it's just one day, the Department of Education, they just show up in your classroom. You didn't know it, but they've been looking at you for the last, you know, 10 months, and they'll just surprise you one day and walk in and say, hey, congratulations, you're, you know, South Dakota's Teacher of the Year. Other states, they do it a little bit differently, like Kentucky, where it's like an open nomination process. Anybody can nominate anybody, you know, and this nomination could come from a kindergartner, could come from a coworker, could come from an administrator, you know, or a parent of a student in your classroom, or just someone in the community. Hey, you saw in the news that there was this teacher mm-hmm. that was doing this great, justice work in like Louisville, Kentucky. Let's nominate this teacher for this award. Once you get nominated in Kentucky, then you have to fill out a series of questions, which, you know, that's, you know, like 5 or 6 pages worth of stuff you have to fill out. And then from that, they narrow it down to about 24. Then from those 24, you know, this is over the series of like 9 months when all this mm-hmm. stuff is happening. But it kind of turns into like the NCAA March Madness tournament where,
oh, wow.
you know, it's like, it's like Survive in Advance where it's like, okay, from 24, they narrow it down to 9. And then from the 9, they narrow it down to 3 with the high school, middle school, and elementary school mm-hmm. teacher of the year. Mm-hmm. And then at the big award ceremony, which is usually in the fall, they end up naming from the elementary, middle, and high the overall winner. Nice. And you know, when I was wow. named, you know, I kind of did that thing where you know, ours was over Zoom because it was during the pandemic, at mm-hmm. least when the pandemic was kind of at its height. And you know, after they named me, I kind of was in shock a little bit because yeah. in my head I'm sitting there thinking like, y'all, I'm not even, you should go see my desk in my classroom on a normal day. And right. I don't even think I'm the best teacher in my building for crying out loud, let alone in the whole state. So, you know, it was definitely a unique, it was definitely a cool, I guess you could say kudos mm-hmm. to kind of add to the old resume, right? But as far as how it's impacted me as a classroom teacher, mm-hmm. You know, knowing because every state and most of the American provinces or territories, sorry, name, wouldn't it be funny if all the Canadian provinces were secretly U.S. territories that we didn't really know about? But
that would not be funny.
I know. It's a little American joke there for you. Anyway, so from those, you know, I now have 53 other educators that if I have an idea, if there's something that even like a classroom that I want to collaborate with, I have the kind of this unique band of teachers that I can yeah. send a message to, send an email to, text message to, and just saying, hey, guys, I'm really struggling. I'm trying to find a book for this particular student. Or I'm, you know, my students are really struggling with, like we just did fractions. We started fractions this week, like simplifying, adding.
Yes.
Yeah. God bless them, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, Anybody have any lesson plans, slide, you know, anything that I could share with my students? So that, you know, that's definitely having that unique network of educators that, you know, kind of think mm-hmm. along the same lines as you do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was also just a year of, so in Kentucky, you get a chance to take a sabbatical with the Department of Education.
Okay.
And during that sabbatical, I got to travel all around the state, visit different conferences, visit different schools, visit different teachers, and just to talk to them about, like, hey, what's going on in your school? Or if I saw that an educator was doing something really neat, maybe through Twitter, Instagram, you know, YouTube, maybe just something kind of came across my, I almost said my desk, like I have a desk at home, but, you know, like I came across my desk. That I could say, hey, I'd love to come and see this in action. Can I come and check it out? So that was definitely a unique opportunity as well that I knew. Like, I originally wasn't going to take the sabbatical because, you know, there's part of it's like, well, as teacher of the year, I feel like I should be in the classroom.
Right.
But my wife talked to me and she said, look, you know, you've been teaching for at that point when I was named 15 years. When else are you going to have a chance to do something like this again? So I just kind of took her up on that, you know, I took her advice to heart, I guess you mm-hmm. could say, and really just traveled all around the state and got to meet, really some of the best teachers I've ever had the chance to come in contact with.
I'm trying to remember, we're friends with, Gerardo of Two Dope Teachers.
Gerardo's great. Yeah, he was our cohort.
Is that your cohort? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been texting
maybe
him
that's,
a lot.
Maybe that's
actually.
The connection.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where I kind of connected with you. Okay. I love
Gerardo and I, Gerardo was fun to text during the World Cup, but he, you know, because he's a big soccer fan.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, Gerardo was part of the cohort too. And when you are named Teacher of the Year, like every year they have a new cohort of
right.
teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's five or six events that they kind of invite you all to.
Yeah.
I guess some of the bigger ones that like our cohort got to experience. We got invited to the White House where
right.
we got to meet the president, mm-hmm. you know, got to meet the first lady. I shook the president's hand, which
right.
was
That's
really cool.
Nice.
You know, it's one of those experiences that I'm like, wow, I don't know how many teachers can say they've met a sitting president before, which was really neat.
Yeah.
You know, even just a year ago today, mm-hmm. all of us got invited to the college football national championship game where they brought us out on the field beforehand,
mm-hmm. no
which as a, you know, as a college football fan, it was kind of a cool experience last year.
One question about that, the details with that, but they don't give mm-hmm. you a ticket, right?
No, they do.
You give a ticket to the stands? Okay.
Oh, sometimes, yeah. Yeah, we were in the game and then they sat us up.
Okay. Sometimes I see
them
bring people on there and they're like, oh, and then they don't like, then you just like
no, they
leave.
Just,
and
they just
to, like,
don't give you like a hot dog or
go,
a beer.
Go
that's,
home.
That's
yeah.
How
yeah.
Cheap
you're done. Yeah. We got, yeah. Okay. Cool.
No,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, we had some cool seats for the game and it was actually kind of, you know, one of the biggest surprises of it. So, you know, we're all sitting up there and they let us bring, you know, each of us got to bring a guest, which was pretty cool. And I asked my wife if she wanted to go, but she's like, I don't really care about college football. So I brought my brother-in-law. So, you know, as we're sitting there watching the game, I look to the right and I start to see like these fellows in suits with like earpieces in start to walk by.
Oh,
like,
wow.
What's going on here? And at first I thought, oh, maybe the president's here. Wasn't. It was actually the Secretary of Education who came and sat down like a few seats behind me, got some photos with him. So that was, again, it was
cool.
One of those opportunities that I was really glad as mm-hmm. Teacher of the Year that I got to do, mm-hmm. you know, got to travel across, you know, I have a buddy of mine who works for the Department of Education the Ministry of Education in Iceland.
Okay.
Got to travel to Iceland for a week and help with some conferences there.
Wow.
It was,
That's a blast. Know. Everyone should do it. Okay. So
everyone,
if you're listening and you
year,
haven't thought about being Teacher of the Year for your state, maybe think about it. So you should do that. I think I'm going to do it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to be Teacher of the Year of next year. But, I think that's cool. That just sounds like a blast. And it sounds like, there's things that will like, that you might not even realize how much of an impact you're going to have, that maybe you just have like little things you can pull from it at different times. Like, I remember I saw this or heard this or did that. So, you've got a podcast. Now I just found out you've got two podcasts. Okay. So,
he's Teacher of the Year, Millie. The guy's not going to slack here.
I know.
So talk
to me about you
podcasts.
And your podcasting world. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So, 5 years ago, we'll kind of throw back a notch. But my friend Jesse Levinsky and Jeffrey Heil, two educators, mm-hmm. we wanted to start a podcast. We just, you know, met each other just through some educational technology conferences and realized we had a lot in common, mostly fantasy sports stuff, but also, you know, just movies, things and stuff that we had in common. So we actually started a podcast 5 years ago called Partial Credit, which we're actually about to record, 4 years ago, I apologize, not five. We're actually just about to record episode 100. This nice. Weekend. It's kind nice. Of fun. Mm-hmm. And on that podcast, which you can find us at partial.credit, we were really excited to learn that you can buy .credit domains. It's usually reserved for banks, but nobody's caught on to it yet. So
nice.
That's one of our Good shows. Times. And that's kind of, yeah, I guess the best way to describe the Partial Credit podcast, it's kind of like pop culture meets just about everything else in education. We have a lot of fun. We got a fun graphic guy that makes some stuff for us. And we've had that podcast running for years. But I guess about a year and a half ago, I had been listening to, so GZM Shows, formerly Gen Z Media. They're the ones who created the Mars Patel podcast. Sorry, the Peabody Award-winning Mars Patel. I'm supposed to say that, right? No, the Peabody Award-winning Mars Patel podcast in 2017, 2018. Mm-hmm. And during the pandemic, they realized that a lot of teachers had started using their shows in the classroom. And I was one of those teachers. I mean, mm-hmm. we remember what that experience was like. We were looking for ideas. We were looking for something that wasn't just students staring at a screen, but was instead maybe something a little more interactive, something that was maybe auditory, something that was creation-based. So I had started assigning my students to listen to episodes of another podcast that Gen Z Media had called 6 Minutes, which it's the most downloaded family audio drama in 16. It's actually number 16. I just looked this morning on the Apple Podcast Fiction Network right now. It's a podcast cool. for middle grade kids, like third grade through, I'd say, seventh or eighth grade. But I had been assigning my students just, hey, listen to this episode. We'll talk about it in class. And I started sharing out like, hey, why aren't more teachers using some of these podcasts in the classroom? And I guess Gen Z Media started to pick up on some of the ideas that I was sharing, just things I was doing with my students. And they reached out to me. And about 6 months later, I had started, you know, they had asked me to start my own show with them for teachers. We're calling our podcast Teachers Passing Notes. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind the show, you can check us out at teacherspassingnotes.com. But the idea behind the show is each week we bring on a guest, a classroom teacher, who comes on and they share just some unique classroom ideas that they're doing with their students. Mm-hmm. And we've had guests who have talked about everything from like we've had guests who have come on and talked about like some low risk question strategies that they're doing with their students, to reading strategies, to math strategies, to even something, you know, some fun project based learning stuff that some teachers are doing. But, you know, we put out about 2 episodes a week, and we just finished up our first season. We're recording the second season as we speak. But, you know, with Teachers Passing Notes, my co-host Elisa and I, we just wanted to create a podcast. Each episode it's about 15 minutes long. We figure that's about a normal teacher's drive to work, where if a teacher is driving to school, they can flip on an episode, they can hear a classroom idea that they could try in their classroom that morning or sometime that week. With all the teachers that we have on, we like to ask, hey, if you've got like a slideshow or a resource or a form or something that we can share, that someone could just grab a copy of, go ahead and do that. And so we try to share like as many resources as we can. Those are kind of the notes that gets passed on. But it's definitely a lot of fun. It's kind of cool to have, I guess, a company like GZM Shows helping kind of promote our podcast a little bit, giving us a chance to, I guess, share different classroom educators' stories, different creative things that they're doing in the classroom. But it's been quite the experience so far. And Elisa and I are excited for season 2. And wink, wink, nudge, nudge, gentlemen, get ready for an invite sometime in the next few weeks, because we'd love to have you on as well.
Yeah, we are ready, willing, and able. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah, yes.
So with all this stuff you're doing, I mean, you're talking to all these top flight educators and, you know, going around and shaking hands with the president, whatever else. I mean, you're picking up a lot of different strategies and, I mean, obviously you've got a lot of your own. So what's like a strategy or a philosophy that you can share with us, with our listeners, that will help to impact their classrooms?
So here, I'll share an idea that we talked about on one of the first episodes we did with teachers passing notes. So, you know, around Halloween every year, like Halloween for me as an educator, like my first 4 years was just a disaster. You know, like you try to tell kids like, look, you know, you try to give a little bit to students like, okay, you can come to school with costumes, but you know, no blood, no weapon, you know, try to throw that out there. And a kid will try to push that envelope as much like, no, it's not blood. It's ketchup on my face. And it's like, no, it's not. Okay. So I tried to come up with a strategy that allows kids the chance to dress up a little bit, but they can also be creative and try to learn something new. It's an idea I actually picked up from my cooperating teacher when I was doing my student teaching called Dictionary Day. And the idea behind Dictionary Day is either on Halloween or, you know, if Halloween's on a Saturday, you do it on the Friday before. About a week beforehand, you assign every student in your class. And this is great for like even kindergartners or if you're teaching intermediate or high school, like you pick some words that might be on like the SAT or whatever test they take. And you assign them a difficult word out of the dictionary. And the rule is it has to be a word that they don't know the meaning of and one that, you know, that they have, you know, it has to be something that they can dress up as. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the whole deal behind it. So that on Halloween, they come to school dressed up as their word, or at least in a way that they can use their costume to teach somebody what the definition of their word is. So they always have to make a little sign, you know, and, you know, on the front of their sign has to be their word. And then on the back of the sign and has to be like their word used in a sentence, you know, what part of speech it is, just, you know, the general teacher stuff that's on there.
Right.
But it's always a lot of fun because kids will come to school. Oh, it's great.
I'm Shane, you're chomping at the bit. I want to know like 4 or 5 like things that somebody pulled off that you're like, oh, my goodness, that's a great way to represent such and such word. Okay. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So a few words of caution first, like you have to, I've been teaching for 17 years. Like I get it. There's some kids that in your head, it's like, oh, I'm going to assign you the word lethargic. And you know what? Like you have to avoid that.
Yes. Let's label
you have to avoid
students.
That kind of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Gluttony for you, my friend. Gluttony.
Yes. Yes. Your word is sloth. Go. Yeah. 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 I just summed it. They're popping off, you know, just kind of in the top of my head here. I assigned a student the word effervescent once, which kind of means like bubbly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she went and she had, she had a bunch of ping pong balls at home. You can figure out why, but she actually took a hat and she like cut the ping pong balls in half and put them all over this hat that she wore.
I see.
It's like, oh, look, these represents the bubbles in my personality. You know, I joked about the word lethargic earlier. It's actually a really fun one because it's an easy costume to make. They grab a blanket, a pillow, and then some students that we always do like a photo where the students, they take on the personality of their word.
Oh,
right. Man. So the photo is always fun because if you give a kid like, well, it was a fun word. Like I gave a student the word zephyr once, which is like a wind that comes from the west. And so they actually brought like this industrial strength fan, and this student had really long hair. So like in the photo, they're holding this fan in front of the face as their the hair is blowing off behind them.
I can just imagine the neighborhood where these kids go trick or treating. It's like all the adults are like, what the heck are with these costumes? It's like, I'm effervescence.
Why are you only using? Why? Yeah. I do have some, because the first few years that I did this, I told students about it a month in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned into, okay, which parent can do the costume the best? And I had students who, when they came to school, it was really, really obvious that the student had no say in what this costume was going to look like. So now I'm very, very, I only give them about a week to do it. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, you know, one, this has to be a costume that you make. And I put this in the email and I put this on the instruction, like, I do not want you going to Michael's Crafts and spending, you know, $100 on, you know, the word, excuse me, ambidextrous, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's not worth, you just use stuff from that's around your house. Yeah. And I try to nail that point home. And, you know, I tell them sometimes the simpler costume is the best, mm-hmm. you know, like I had a student who I gave them the word cascade. Once, you know, like water and stuff falling. Right. So they just brought two cups of water mm-hmm. and their costume, well, you know, they put water in one, nothing in the other, and they just poured, look, the water's cascading from one cup to the next. Oh. So
I would just I would just get the detergent for my dishwasher.
Absolutely. There you go. Yeah.
Staple the box to my shirts.
Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of the whole point behind Dictionary Day. It's, you know, it's not just you trying to wow your classmates in the best way that you've come up with the word precocious or whatever.
Right.
But instead, it's more, hey, how can you creatively teach some other students about what this word means?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do with it, though, is throughout the day, we have lots of activities that are centered around like the words in the classroom. So we do a challenge where, you know, we all stand up. I feel like speaking and listening is important. So I have the students stand up. They have to say what their word is while they're dressed like they are. They have to use the word in a sentence. But then I put all the words up on the board and I always like I'm typing up their definitions as they're listing them off to me. And then we have a story writing competition where the students then have to write a story. I give them like 30 minutes to an hour to write a story that includes at least X number of words from dictionary, maybe like five. I kind of depending on the students each year, but hey, you know, the more of these words you can incorporate, you know, kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the challenge that you throw out to them. Even as we're walking through the hallways, the teachers in my building, they know it's Dictionary Day. So as they're walking down the hallways, like they always ask students like, oh, what's your word? Why are you dressed like this? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the parents like it too, because it's on Halloween and they know, hey, I don't have to find a costume for you this year because we made one and it's going to be something educational. So have fun with it.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
And you get to avoid the blood and the guts and all that kind of stuff too, right? That's pretty handy.
Yeah. I don't put the word splatter or anything like that.
No, guillotine is not one of your
No, that's not one. No.
That'd be fun. Awesome. All right. Mila, you want to bring this one home?
Sure. So we always like to end like with some funny stories, some anecdotes or whatever your kind of like go-to thing. We know crazy stuff happens in the classroom, and you've been in classrooms in Iceland and other places. So you've probably seen some wild
crazy
stuff.
Iceland, as we all know, is hilarious.
Oh my goodness, so much fun.
Iceland, people known for their humor.
It is. That's why Will Ferrell made that Eurovision there, because he knew it was hysterical. But
listen, if y'all ever go to Iceland, try the fermented shark. You have to try it at least once.
The fermented shark.
If it's funny.
What's it called? Can you summon up the Icelandic name for it?
Yes, it's fermented shark. We'll leave it at that.
How you say it.
It's
nice
actually, yes. It's rotted fermented shark.
Okay.
But we'll roll it that way.
Okay.
But.
Well, Shane, so I'm going to do it my best Icelandic accent. Okay,
oh, no. There goes the Icelandic listeners.
Fermented shark. Okay.
That sounds more Scottish than Icelandic.
Yeah, there's a little Icelandic. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Like a pirate there. I don't know what
that is. Fermented shark.
Okay, Shane, well, do me better. Do me one better then.
Oh, I don't even know. There's a reason I'm not in
your repertoire?
Oh, gosh. The fermented shark. No, I can't do it. That just sounds Irish now. I can't do it either. I've never really taken a good stab at the Icelandic accent. But,
Okay. All righty. Donnie, did you want to give it a whirl or no?
No, I'm good. So when I was in Iceland, little funny story, it was for a conference, and one night at the conference, they brought in this Icelandic musician comedian, mm-hmm. right? But the entire thing was in Icelandic, and my friend and I, we speak English, like we were sitting here through this, and every like 10 seconds, everybody would bust out laughing. We'd have no idea what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to lean into my friend Yngvi, who explains the joke. And by the time he's explained it, it's like, okay, that's really not, you know, just kind of, he moved on to the next one. But anyway, little aside there.
Mm. That's funny. Did you end up laughing yourself as well or no?
I did in pity. So like, I didn't want to stand out too much that I didn't know what was going on because there was like a film crew there. But yeah.
Okay.
Just kind of went with the flow, kind of laugh. Okay.
Cool. So, and so funny stories. We always like to end with funny stories. So hit us with your go-to anecdote.
All right. So when I first, so in Kentucky, we have lots of fun city names, mm-hmm. right? We have everything from, we have Baghdad, Kentucky. We have London, Kentucky, Paris, Kentucky. And we also have Versailles, Kentucky, which, you know, most people, when they see that, they say Versailles, mm-hmm. But we're Kentucky. So we call it Versailles because that's actually how it looks. And Google Maps gets it wrong all the time too. Mm-hmm. I taught in Versailles, Kentucky for 7 years. And my first year that I taught, I got an email from a school, a primary school in Versailles, France. And this was a school in Versailles that they were reaching out to all the Versailles across the United States and want to do like a pen pal program. And of course, like when I look at this email, so this was 2006, 2007, you know, like it look, I was very cautious as a teacher back then. So, you know, any emails that I got that weren't from the district, I was like, okay, if I respond to this, am I going to get fired? Am I like giving away something?
Yeah.
You know, danger, right. Will Robinson, that whole kind of thing. But anyway, so this email I'm looking and I see that it's from an AOL address, right? Which even in 2006, 2007, you're like, come on, like there's no way. So I completely ignore the email for about a week. Eventually, I told my students about it. I was teaching fourth grade at the time, told my fourth graders about it. And they, you know, there's a group of four girls. You're like, oh, come on, Mr. Piercy, what if it's true? Let us write this letter for you. And, you know, this was before I had an iPhone. This was before I had really a camera in my classroom. So I wish I could have taken a picture of this letter that these students wrote. They wrote it in 10 minutes. You know, everything was misspelled. It was exactly what you don't want to send. You know, if you're going to do a pen pal program, it's not what you want. But I was like, look, I didn't think this is real. Whatever, we'll send it. There was no identifying information on it. So we sent it and some beef jerky to this, you know, this school, quotes, in Versailles, jerky. France.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
is that a Kentucky?
Anyway, so,
was what Kentucky's famous for in their mind or just American,
well, that,
thing?
Bourbon and horses.
Okay,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, if you really want to know, this was a week after the holidays. This was like January-ish. So more than likely a student had given me it for Christmas.
Gotcha. There we go.
And I was just kind of sitting
left
there.
Leftover sitting in the desk. There we go.
You know how it is. It's like, look, I bought the exact same thing. Anyway, so about a week goes by, month goes by, don't hear back. And in my head, like as a teacher, I'm like, I did it. You know, I knew I was right. This isn't, you know, I didn't even get an email or anything. But a month and a half goes by, and it's during my planning period. And I get, you know, you get that PA, Ms. Piercy, can you come up to the office?
Oh, boy.
Go up there, and there is not only a package, you know, full of handwritten in cursive letters. They even had acrostic poems in English from every single student in the fourth grade at this school. But they also sent like four boxes full of like French chocolates and brochures and snacks and treats.
Oh my goodness.
And all this stuff. So yeah, it was one of those moments where as a teacher, like, you know, I don't swear very often, but it was one of those moments where I was like, oh crap, I messed up. I missed a huge opportunity there. But I kind of made a decision right then and there that I was not going to let my students miss any more opportunities like that. And that's, I guess you could say like that experience has kind of shaped my whole career as mm-hmm. a teacher, because when those cool opportunities come up where you can connect your students to another classroom, where you can share your culture, your experience with somebody on the other side of the world, or even just someone across the street who might be a little bit different than you. There's so many ways that you can do that in the classroom. And I don't know, it's just something that over the last 17 years I've really tried to do for my students every day.
That's awesome. Okay. I love that.
And the French chocolate was really good.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Alrighty. Well, guys, we appreciate you listening, not only to this episode, but to the episodes of Donnie's podcast, to our episode with Two Dope Teachers and Tony Danza. I mean, like, you know, you've got so much podcast listening to do right now. I told you could be listening to another episode when you were done. So we just appreciate everyone listening. And hey, if you get a chance when you're out there and out and about, and someone cuts you off in traffic, you just yell out the window, "Hey, maybe you drive better if you listen to Unprofessional Development Podcast." And they'll be so confused. Okay. But it'll make you feel better and it'll help us get more listeners. All right. So we thank you. And as always, at the end, we say, stay unprofessional.
I'd like to get more reading done, and joining a book club seems like a good idea, but I don't know.
Why not?
Reading a whole book in a month, that's pretty daunting.
What if it was just a chapter, say, a week?
That doesn't sound too bad. Still, getting together with a bunch of people, that's a whole evening.
Well, what if it was only half an hour, whenever you wanted to?
That would be great.
The Read Along, a mini book club for your ears.
Join my wife, Anita.
And my husband, Scott.
As we take you on a journey through a good book,
one chapter at a time.
A proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network.
Locally grown.
Community supported.
Available right now on your podcatcher of choice.